Hello, this is Randy Thompson from the North Carolina Reading Service. Welcome to Music Review. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. For the next half hour, I shall be reading articles about music from such sources as the New York Times, the News and Observer, the Week Magazine, Rolling Stone, and Entertainment Weekly. Music Review is underwritten by Bill McClure, tuning pianos in the Raleigh area since 1968. For more information or to schedule a piano tuning appointment, please call 919-779-1755. This program is designed to provide the latest coverage of classical, folk, jazz, blues, rock, country, and pop music news. But first, these musical trivia questions. Today's trivia questions come to us from the websites onthisday.com and classicfm.com. Question number one. A patent was submitted on this very day back in 1885 for the gramophone. Which of these is a true statement about phonographs and gramophones? Is it A, phonographs were invented after and as a type of gramophone? Is it B, the gramophone was invented by Edison? Is it C, phonograph used flat discs while gramophones used cylinders? D, all of the above statements are true, or E, none of the above statements is true? So, is there any truth to the gramophone? If so, what is it? And question number two, what is an octobass? Is it A, it's a bass instrument that plays an octave higher than a normal bass? Is it B, it's a bass instrument that only has two sides? The other two are left open. Is it C, it's a bass instrument that stands 8 inches lower than a regular bass? Or is it D, it's a type of exotic fish with 8 heads? Or is it E, all of the above are true? Or is it F, none of the above is true? An octobass, bass. What is that, anyway? The answers to these two important questions will be given, as usual, at the end of today's program. Our transitions come to us from that same website, onthisday.com, and today, quote-unquote, is the weekend of June 27th. Well, it was on this day, back in 1957, that Buddy Holly recorded the song Peggy Sue. That was 1957 today. And it was 66 years ago today, 1959, that the play West Side Story, with music by Leonard Bernstein, closed after 734 performances on Broadway. West Side Story, closed today, 1959.
Put on my jeans, my favorite shirt, pull up my boots and hit the dirt. Finally doing something I've dreamed of for years. Don't know quite what to expect, a little scared, but what the heck. My desire is always greater than my fear.
Dolly Parton's Big Dreams and Faded Dreams and Faded Jeans introduces our country music news. It's titled, A New Exhibit Showcases Dolly Parton's Rags to Riches Story. Growing up in a one-room cabin in rural Tennessee, Dolly Parton was a little girl with big dreams. Although blessed with talent, beauty, and charisma, it took a bit of hard work to become one of show business's most beloved lived legends. A new exhibit at Nashville's Country Music Hall of Fame and Museum, Dolly Parton, Journey of a Seeker, traces her career from when she first hit the music charts in 1967 until now. I think it's wonderful that I have been able to see my little girl dreams come true. Dolly, 79, said at the exhibit's May 19th opening reception. It's a long ways from the top of the Smoky Mountains to the top of the world, and I'm so grateful because it didn't come without sacrifice. The show includes a display of Dolly's original song manuscripts, instruments, awards, magazine covers, and, of course, flamboyant costumes from all decades of her career. Follow your heart. Dolly provided many of the costumes and also custom clothing on display. I always laugh when I get called a fashion icon, she once told Vogue. I'm more of an eyesore, only because I overdo it.
And baby jeans fit together like a team, always busting at the seams, big dreams.
Billy Joel's Uptown Girl introduces our jazzy pop music news. It's titled, What is Billy Joel's Brain Disorder? Inside the Piano Man's Health Crisis. This is written by Jessica Sager, May 28, 2025, in Parade magazine. The Uptown Girl crooner canceled all of his upcoming concerts, including solo shows, as well as performances with Sting and Stevie Nicks, after he was diagnosed with a brain disorder that can hinder his hearing, vision, and overall well-being, especially if and when he performs. A rep for Joel said that he is grateful for the support from fans during this time and looks forward to the day when he can once again take the stage. Joel is facing a health crisis that necessitates time away from the stage. He canceled all of his scheduled concerts through July 2026 to undergo treatment for a brain disorder called normal pressure hydrocephalus. Joel was advised by his doctor and medical care team to refrain from performing during the recovery period. His team said in a statement, Joel's rep said that the singer's recent concerts worsened his condition and impacted his hearing, vision, and balance, all of which are necessary for him to be able to perform in the future once he recovered. Joel fell on stage during a February 2025 performance in Connecticut, and the unfortunate incident was captured on video. In the clip, Joel spins his microphone stand towards the audience before losing his balance. Thankfully, he recovered quickly to thunderous applause. Thankfully, in most cases, normal cases of this are treatable and reversible. Typical treatment includes implanting a device called a shunt valve, which uses two catheters to control and correct the flow of fluid to and from the brain. The singer told People he's eager to get back on stage once the doctors give him the all clear. The insider quipped, he's not retiring and hopes to be able to resume performing as his recovery progresses. Thank you. And in music research and technology, we have this article titled, See Inside a Pianist's Brain, live for the first time with this groundbreaking new technology. This is published on the 19th of June, 2025 by Lucy Hicks Beach and published in ClassicFM.com. It's always exciting to see a pianist's fingers when they play, but have you ever wanted to see inside their brain? For the first time ever, the minds of musicians will be put on display in a truly innovative way. Using state-of-the-art neural imaging techniques developed by University of California and the Brain Dynamics Lab at the University of Calgary and the Glass Brain Visual Station tool, researchers are able to track and project a pianist's brain activity in real time as they perform. This pioneering approach opens up exciting new avenues for understanding musical performance, cognition, and emotional response. The technology will make its debut at the Verbier Festival in the form of the world's first neuro recital, a performance that pairs live piano music with synchronized projections of the pianist's brain activity. The brain data, which will be displayed for the audience to see, comes from pianist Nicholas Namaradze, who will perform pieces by Bach, Debussy, and Scriabin. Namaradze, who will also introduce each piece, says, "This project invites listeners to engage with music in a fundamentally new way. We've been able to collect brain data in an entirely novel fashion, which represents a breakthrough in research. It's opened the door to consistent, analytically stable brain data from live music making for the very first time." The program includes works from Bach's Well-Tempered Clavier, Debussy's Preludes, and Scriabin's Piano Sonatas. As Namaradze plays, the glass brain will project real-time images of his brain activity, offering the audience an unprecedented look into the mind of the performer. This collaboration hopes to uncover new insights into interpretation, cognition, and emotional response while reimagining the concept experience and the concert. Namaradze continues, "It's a thought-provoking and immersive journey into the very heart of musical performance. The neuro recital is both a performance and a fascinating glimpse into the neurological processes behind musicianship." Led Zeppelin's Our Stairway to Heaven introduces our rock and pop music news. It's titled Legendary 70s Rock Band's Hit Song Still Sparks Fan Theories 50 Years Later. This is published in Parade magazine by Isabella Torrigiani on June 19, 2025. It's been well over 50 years since Led Zeppelin released one of the most iconic rock songs of all time, and fans are still debating what it actually means. The British rock group, consisting of Jimmy Page, John Bonham, Robert Plant, and John Paul Jones, dropped Stairway to Heaven in 1971 as part of their fourth studio album, Led Zeppelin IV. Clocking in at over 8 minutes long, the track quickly became a defining moment in their career, rising on global charts and later earning a place in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame's 500 songs that shaped rock and roll. Despite its legendary status, the song's meaning has remained mysterious, even for devoted fans. Some listeners have spent decades trying to make sense of the lyrics, while others remain just as confused as ever. Guitarist Page, who composed the music, once explained that the song was built to evolve as it went. The idea of Stairway was to have a piece of music, a composition, whereby it would just keep on unfolding into more layers, more moods, he told BBC in 2018. The subtlety of the intensity and the overlay of the composition would actually accelerate as it went through on every level. As for the lyrics, Page said that Plant, who wrote them, was influenced by the magic arts in Celtic Britain, a book by Lewis Spence. I remember vividly Robert was sitting on the floor, back against the wall, writing while this was going on, he recalled to The Guardian in 2014. We had another couple of run-throughs, and then he walks over and starts singing along. And he starts saying, from my recollection, he had good 90% of it already. Still, fans continue to speculate, with countless theories appearing under the song's official YouTube audio. One listener suggested the song represents a choice between two paths, symbolized by a woman who believes she can, quote-unquote, buy her way into heaven. They quoted lyrics like, if the stores are all closed, with a word she can get what she came for, as evidence of her belief that all that glitters is gold. Another commentator argued that the song contains clear Christian themes, writing, you know this song has Christian aspects to it. The conversation continues on Reddit, too, where entire threads are dedicated to deciphering the song's message. Some argue it's just a bunch of gibberish set to pretty chords. Others offer more thoughtful interpretations like, I always thought it was about the end of the 60s, a sad look ahead at the decadence and the me decade, which Zeppelin took part in, and a general urge to people to stay strong. Regardless of which theory resonates, one thing is clear, Stairway to Heaven still has fans debating like it just dropped yesterday, and it's probably not going to stop anytime soon. Well, the temperatures lately indicate that summer has arrived. What better way to cool off than going to the beach? The Embers, I Love Beach Music, introduces our local music news. The article titled, The 30 Best Songs About the Beach. A day on the sand just doesn't seem complete without a beach playlist that sets the right tone and gives off good vibes. This is written by Kimberly Holland, April 23rd, 2025, Southern Living. From 1950s beach music to modern rock and pop, singers throughout the ages have embraced the chill vibes of pounding surf, coconut-scented sunscreen, and umbrella drinks. And of course, no beach music list is complete without the Beach Boys or Jimmy Buffett. Our favorite beach songs capture everything a day by the water is: sunny, warm, and relaxing, with a pinch of nostalgia. So here are some of the beach songs included in this article. Under the Boardwalk by the Drifters, but it's been covered by such artists as the Rolling Stones and John Mellencamp. Beyond the Sea by Bobby Darin. Darin's 1959 release is based on the song La Mer by a French composer. California Girls, Surfing USA, Good Vibrations, and Catch a Wave by the Beach Boys. Surf City by Jan and Dean, this song, co-written by Brian Wilson, by the way, was the first surf song to become a number one hit in America. Itsy Bitsy Teeny Weeny by Brian Hyland, a 16-year-old former choir boy from Queens. This lovely song about bikinis hit number one in August of 1960. A Wipeout by the Safaris. Summer Nights by Olivia Newton-John and John Travolta from the movie Grease. The Dock of the Bay by Otis Redding, who never got to hear the recorded version. He died in a plane crash just before it was released. Margaritaville by Jimmy Buffett, the song that inspired the movement. At the Beach by the North Carolina country roots duo, the Avett Brothers. And Only the Ocean by Jack Johnson, singer, songwriter, and conservationist. So how did you do on today's trivia questions? Well, the answer to our first question, a patent was submitted on this very day back in 1885 for the gramophone. Which of these is true statement about phonographs and gramophones? Is it A, phonographs were invented after and as a type of gramophone? Is it B, the gramophone was invented by Edison? Is it C, phonographs use flat discs while gramophones use cylinders? Or is it D, all of the above statements are true? Or is it E, none of the above statements is true? Correct answer? Answer E, none of those statements as worded are true. The phonograph was actually invented by Edison about a decade before the gramophone. Furthermore, Edison's phonograph used cylinders, while the gramophone used flat discs. As noted in GramophoneGuru.com, in 1888, Emil Berliner invented a machine that recorded sound in a groove, starting at the edge of a flat disc and spiraling into the center. Showing a fine contempt for both grammar and meaning, he called his device the gramophone. And as noted by the Library of Congress, unlike the cylinder machines, which could be used for both recording and playback, Berliner's method required two machines, one for each process. The terms phonograph and gramophone are often used interchangeably, but traditionally they refer to different types of sound reproduction devices. The phonograph, invented by Thomas Edison, originally used a rotating cylinder to record and play back sound. The gramophone, invented by Emil Berliner, uses flat discs, also known as records, for sound storage and playback. Early phonographs were sometimes called gramophones because gramophone was the name given to a specific type of phonograph that used flat disc records instead of cylinders. In the United States, phonograph became the generic term for any sound recording and playback device, regardless of whether it used cylinders or discs. However, in Britain, gramophone became the more common term for disc-playing devices. Initially, gramophone was a trademark, and its use by other companies was challenged in court. However, the term eventually became genericized, and it was on this very day, back in 1885, that Chichester Bell and Charles Tainter applied for a patent on their invention known as the gramophone. And the answer to our second question, what is an octobass? Is it A, it's a bass instrument that plays an octave higher than a normal bass? Is it B, it's a bass instrument that only has two sides, the other two are left open? Or is it C, it's a bass instrument that stands 8 inches lower than a regular bass? Or is it D, it's a type of exotic fish with 8 heads? Is it E, all of the above, in fact, are true? Or is it F, none of the above is true? And the correct answer is, well, I'm afraid we've got an F today. None of those statements is true as worded. As noted by ClassicFM.com, the octobass is a massive, rare bowed string instrument, essentially a very large double bass designed to produce extremely low-pitched sounds. It stands over 3 meters, over 11 feet, tall, and utilizes a system of levers and pedals to help musicians reach and play the strings. Its lowest notes are so deep they can be felt more than heard, approaching the limits of human hearing. Now, here's a more detailed breakdown. Due to its size, the octobass is played using a system of levers and pedals. Musicians operate these to press the strings down to change the pitch, as the fingerboard is too large to reach conventionally. The sound? The octobass produces incredibly low frequencies, with its lowest notes often being below the range of human hearing. The sound is often described as a deep rumble or vibration rather than a clearly defined pitch. It is an extremely rare instrument with only a few playable examples in existence today. Originally intended to add depth and rumble to orchestral music, its size and playing mechanism have limited its widespread adoption. So let's close out today's program with what those very early recordings sounded like. Here's opera singer Enrico Caruso, recorded in 1912, singing Dreams of Long Ago on a 12-inch, single-sided, 78 RPM shellac disc. Caruso began singing for the Gramophone and Typewriter Company in 1902. As noted by EBSCO, Caruso's recording marked a significant moment in the history of classical music and the phonograph industry. Here, then, is Enrico Caruso. Well, we've run out of time for today's episode of Music Review. Be sure to tune in at the same time next week. This program is also available as a podcast after the broadcast in our website, ncreadingservice.org. As we leave you now, remember these words. Kindness is a language which blind people see and deaf people hear. Content of this program intended for people who are blind or print impaired. If you have a suggestion for music to feature on this program, please leave a message for me at 919-832-5138. I'm Randy Thompson, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. Music Review, underwritten by Bill McClure, tuning pianos in the Raleigh area since 1968. For more information or to schedule a piano tuning, please call 919-779-1755. So long, until next time.